You're listening to We're Only Human, hosted by Ben Eubanks on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. We're Only Human focuses and highlights how modern technology and new ways of working are creating a more people-centric workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.h3hr.com.
Greetings, everyone. It's Ben Eubanks. Welcome to We're Only Human. Despite living in the South, it's turning into winter already, but I have a remedy for you, especially if you're an HR practitioner in the audience. In early February, right in the heart of the cold months, I'm going to be setting sail on the HR Conference Cruise, which, to be honest, is exactly as fun as it sounds. I'd love to have you join me on the experience if you're curious. It's a series of great HR content combined with the beautiful Royal Caribbean Cruise. And as I mentioned, it's happening in February. You know, you get to see me speak, you get to hear some other great content, you get to network with some people, and heck, you're on a cruise in the middle of February. How can you go wrong, right? If you're curious, you want to learn more, I got a link in the show notes. You can get a discount if you use the code FRIENDOFBEN when you sign up, and the event has been pre-approved for 13 research credits, which I know is gold for all my certified brothers and sisters out there. I mentioned the event specifically because today I'm talking with one of my fellow speakers on the cruise, Jill Kapanis. Jill and I talk about what it takes to be a professional troublemaker and disruptor in the HR profession. It's a fun conversation, and I really hope that you enjoy it. Links to the sign-up are in the show notes, as well as the discount code to get $50 off as a friend and listener of the show. And now, here's Jill.
Hey, everybody. It's Ben. And today, I'm chatting with another speaker on the HR Conference Cruise. I'm really excited to bring you this conversation because it's going to be a lot of fun, very interesting, and probably a little provocative, too, which is always good. The speaker that I'm going to be chatting with today is Jill Kapanis. And welcome to the show, Jill.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here and talk about what we're going to be doing on the cruise and the sessions.
Awesome. Well, before we get to that, I want to let everybody know a little bit about you. So tell us a little bit about you, who you are, and what you do.
Well, I'm Vice President of Human Resources for a company called Dynamic Dies. We're a manufacturer of tooling for corrugated box industry here in Toledo, Ohio. And I also am a national speaker with Shazam Communications, a company I own. I get the opportunity to speak at Sherm Annual Conference as well as other national conferences. But, of course, the best one is speaking on the HR Cruise, which I got to do the inaugural cruise last February, and just really excited to be doing both cruises this coming February in 2018.
I know. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, again, we were chatting about it in our prep call about how who would not want to be first in Florida and then out on the open sea in the February timeframe when everybody else here in the U.S. is bearing the brunt of what winter has to bring. So just like you, I'm thrilled to be out there, and I think my wife's going to thank me for it as well for bringing her along, so it's going to be a lot of fun. So the thing I'm really excited to talk to you about today is a little preview of the session you're actually going to be leading at the conference, actually both of these sessions, but let's start off with the first one. And to be honest with you, when I heard the word troublemaker, I knew it was going to be a good session. Regardless of what comes after, troublemaker is always going to be good. So tell us what it means to be a troublemaker.
Okay, well, as you know, Webster would say troublemaker is one who deliberately stirs up trouble. But in the HR and in the business world, I kind of redefine Webster's definition, and I call a troublemaker one who challenges status quo to make a difference. It's time for us to kind of get out of that static corporate mindset and begin to shift the dynamics in our workplace. In other words, stop doing what everyone else is doing, because that's just maintaining. And to really be a troublemaker, it means you're a leader, you're the first one out there doing it. You're not just doing it because everybody else is doing it or has been doing it. You're stirring up trouble and making a difference in the workplace. And so that's kind of what we're going to be doing on this session on the cruise. We'll be stirring up trouble. It's not your average session. We start out with a little bit of rocky music. We're going to be flying paper airplanes to prove a point that we still think inside the lines. So it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of learning, and hopefully a lot of troublemakers leave that ship after the conference and walk into the workplace and stir up some trouble.
Absolutely. So give me an example of what you mean by troublemaker, because, again, for someone that hasn't had the pleasure of hearing you talk about it, the way you kind of explain it is pretty interesting. So give us an example of what it looks like in practice.
Well, the first thing I'll start with is, as a troublemaker, get rid of the buzzwords. We all use them, and they really don't make any definitive difference in the workplace. For example, that long-term buzzword, the one I campaign to get rid of all the time, is seat at the table. Just waiting around for an invitation to seat at the table is not going to make you a leader. So I say, what are you doing to make a difference, to actually host a meeting, to invite people to join you for that seat at the table? You've got to be the ones giving out the invitation, which means what programs are you doing in your company that are really going to make a difference so that you can invite people to the boardroom for those meetings, to roll out those type of programs. A perfect example, I go back like 15 years ago when I was in charge of, well, I still am, but our medical, and you know, everybody's facing problems with cost control. We were back in 2002. We still are today when it comes to healthcare cost. And instead of shifting cost and going to high deductibles and carving spouses off the plan, I'm like, no, we're going to educate our employees how to spend the corporate checkbook and help them really understand the dynamics of controlling healthcare costs. And I remember brokers telling me I was nuts. I was setting our company up for failure. But fast forward 15 years later, we've saved over $4 million on our health care, and we're still sitting at a low, low deductible. So you have to just challenge the system to make a difference.
Very interesting. Well, one of the going to the seat at the table thing, one of my friends put it this way, and I love it. He said, you know, there's not a seat at a table like in a restaurant. It's a food truck. You've got to go find out where that conversation's happening and be in it. Don't wait for it to come to you. Don't assume that it's happening somewhere else and you're just missing out. You just need to go and find it. Just like, I guess he was hungry when he was explaining that metaphor to me, but I like the idea of there's not a meeting going on somewhere and you just got to find out how to crack that code and get into that meeting. It's happening, you know, at the front lines, your operations people, wherever they're having problems, wherever there are opportunities for like that, for HR to step in and support in some way, form, or fashion.
I love it. I might just steal that for the conference and use that as an example. But, you know, another one is I was at a talent management symposium, and somebody asked about 360 assessments. And I still remember they said, again, that buzzword, they said, you know, we're not using 360 assessments in our company, but I noticed companies around us are, and am I not being strategic by not introducing it into my company? And I remember sharing with that attendee, it's like, that's just a buzzword. You have to figure out, does it work for your company or not? And if it doesn't, don't do it. Because I always like to say, there'll be a new buzzword tomorrow, because there's always got to be a book that has to be written, so you got to have a buzzword. So we need to start challenging ourselves. What's going to make a difference in our company? Stop following what everyone else is doing and do what's right for your company.
Here's one of the ones that I hear all the time, and it's become a cliche almost, and yet you still hear it regardless. And we've always done it this way. Well, it's always been done this way. Well, it's worked for this long. And why do you think that kind of conversation or that kind of response when they're faced with something like this is the default response for so many people?
I think we're all used to our comfort zone, without a doubt. And we do challenge that in this session, too, when we talk about the comfort zones. And, you know, I always say, in our comfort zone, our little circle, there's this line that's right through the middle of it, and I call it your ho-hum line of life. And most of us exist in the bottom half of our circle of life. We do what we're used to and comfortable doing. And that's why I think we sit there in the workplace and go, oh, it didn't work before. And it's like, well, when was before? Well, before was 10 years ago. Before was before we had this technology. And so we have to take off those corporate blinders and say, okay, let's start from scratch and say, what if, not we've done it before, but what if we tried it this time and what would work or what could be the positives or the outcomes? We just have to take off those blinders. And I don't think a lot of people realize they still have blinders on. But when challenged to make something work, you suddenly realize how many times you held yourself back with the words, oh, it won't work. We've done that before.
Yeah, we tried that, and it failed. And
yeah, kind of that Dilbert attitude.
Well, the thing that I saw that really play out in practice a couple weeks ago. I was leading a workshop at an event, and we were talking about hacking HR. And one of the things that the audience had to do, each table of participants, each group was working on a different problem. And they had to, once they defined kind of the problem, they had to define what their aspirational goal was. Or if I could wave my magic wand and fix this, what would it look like? What would the perfect state be? Or what? And most of them had the most trouble with that because some of them were so focused on the problem, they were only looking at what they were moving away from, not what they were moving to. And so they had never stopped to think about, well, goodness, if it did work, what would it look like? Because it might just be a few steps away. It might be a few degrees of turning the ship instead of radical revolutionary change. But because they were completely stuck in that rut, or they were only focusing and prioritizing that thing that they were unhappy with, they never took that moment to say, well, if this worked, if it was fixed, how would it be different? And just like to your point there, they never stopped to think about how to change those things because somewhere, at some point, that had been crushed out of them, and so they had given up on that idea, I guess.
You know, a perfect example, I just was reading this 2 days ago to highlight what you're just saying. A teacher had handed out a piece of paper, and it was a dot right in the center of the piece of paper that was it. And their quiz for the day was to just simply write out, what do they see on that piece of paper? And student after student, without failure, focused on that dot when they wrote up their description of what they saw on the piece of paper. And the teacher highlighted that no one talked about all the white space, all the opportunity, what's going on beyond the dot. And I think that is a good analogy of what you're just saying. We always focus on that dot, the one thing we know, and we don't look at the white piece of paper, all that open space, all that opportunity of what it could all become.
And we're going to be trading these things around because I love that idea too. Students kind of run off with that one because I love the idea of we're focusing on that 0.1% when the other 99.9% out there is opportunity, is a change, is something else that could lead to something different. Well, one of the things that I think, again, jumping tracks just a little bit, is one of the things that I think needs to be shaken up a little bit is this idea of engagement. It's stagnated pretty heavily over the years. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that topic.
Well, you know, I speak a lot on engagement, and so, of course, when you speak, it takes a lot of research leading up to it. And one of the things that I think is really eye-opening is if you look at some of the statistics, like Gallup has a statistic out there that from 2011 to 2016, so over a span of 5-6 years, there has been no statistical difference when it comes to measuring engagement in our corporations. And yet you look at all the effort, all the programs, all the articles, all the corporate training that's gone on around engagement, and you have to ask yourself, what is happening? And I think we need to kind of change it up, because one of the first things I say is get rid of the word employee engagement and call it what it is, leadership-driven engagement. I mean, it doesn't change. We've always said it starts from the top, and it does start from the top, but it intermixes through the whole corporation. In fact, I heard a really great way, and there's all sorts of ways to describe the engagement process in your company, but I recently saw a really great way that it described highly engaged employees as the owners of your company, engaged employees as your renters, and the disengaged employees as the vandals. And our job is to create a lease purchase opportunity for the renters to buy back into the corporation and be highly engaged. And I thought, wow, I never related engagement to real estate, but it's a really great way to think about it. You want owners in your company, not vandals. And so you need to quit focusing on your disengaged and focus on your engaged folks.
Yeah, focus on those people that are in that opportunity where we can actually sway them or change them. Those people that are at the bottom end, it's going to be really hard to convince someone that they're excited about work. And that goes back to, again, we have debated for years, you know, hiring for someone's attitude versus their experience. And so many times it comes down to that attitude, that interest, that desire, that hunger being a thing that sets someone apart from someone else who might be highly qualified, but otherwise, you know, marginally interested in the job or in the company. And that's what I come back to. So I like that example as well. Really interesting.
You know what else, Ben, is when it comes to engagement, we all focus on, and we have for years, employee engagement surveys. But we have to stop and think also, too, employee engagement surveys focus one-on-one-on-one. In other words, everybody's opinion counts equally. So that means that highly disengaged person in your corporation has as much voice as the highly engaged. So you, when you're taking a survey and you're getting feedback, you know, it's like, don't you want to focus more on your highly engaged and what they want to have to stay engaged in the company? So we have to look at even the value of engagement surveys. Why are we doing them, and how is everybody getting a voice out there? Because we always say you should spend your time focusing on the folks doing it right, the highly engaged, the engaged, and yet surveys give everybody an equal voice. And we're all out in that field. We know that there are just some employees that you'll never be able to make happy no matter what you do.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's that's a lesson there for anybody out there in the audience that works for one of the survey companies or someone that does employee engagement surveys. Think about how to weight those responses differently and give that a shot, because it'd be really interesting to see what the results look like. The picture might not be so bleak for some organizations, or they might not be going down a path that only matters to a small, vocal, unhappy minority when the rest of the people are pretty satisfied with what they're doing. One of the things that occurred to me around this engagement thing, I had done a survey earlier this year, done some research on the topic, and let's talk about performance, for instance, performance management approaches, because that was one of the more recent studies we did, and we connected in whether someone's performance management approach actually engaged employees or not, and we found that companies that had a culture that saw employees as appreciating assets over time, they had a more collaborative or creative culture, they were more likely to say that their employee performance management process was engaging and actually helped people to perform better. Whereas companies that had a culture that was highly controlling or highly competitive, where they kind of bred competition amongst the people, they actually said that their performance management approach actually hampered the performance of employees, the way they were kind of handling it. And that goes back to just this idea of engagement, the little things that we have, all these little levers that we can pull as HR leaders. While we don't have the final control, there's so much that direct manager can control the person's engagement by how they interact with them or not. We have these little levers and practices and processes and things that we do have some control over. And that's what I love about HR. At the same time, it's sometimes a challenge because we don't have that final say, that final authority to really, you know, demand this sort of stuff go through. But it's one of those things I always come back to is we have these little levers we can pull. You know, you talked about educating someone about healthcare a minute ago. That seems like it's so far down the list, but at the same time, it pays off for the company. The person feels like, hey, they're not just throwing this at me. I'm educated. I'm informed. I understand this stuff. So there's a lot of different ways that we can really help people to be more engaged without just throwing a survey at them and hoping for the best.
Oh, I totally agree. In fact, when you're talking about performance management, we tore ours apart. I see as a troublemaker, take systems and tear them apart. And when you put them back together, they really shouldn't look the same. That's part of innovation. So when we tore apart our performance and management system, you know, you had 20 things you rate an employee on from 1 to 5 or good to bad or whatever. And I'm like, well, when you do that, and it's kind of reviews we're all used to, you're always looking at the past. And we wanted to start looking forward. So we totally tore apart our review system, and we put it back together. We literally have 4 things we rate our employees on. They have a performance goal, a production goal. They have a quality goal. They have a lean initiative goal and a personal development goal. So, and when it comes to their personal development goal and their lean initiative goal, the employee themselves comes up with what they want that goal to be for the year. So they already have ownership in it, and then they meet 4 times a year with the manager to update the manager on how they're doing And of course, at the end of the year, they're rated on, did they achieve their goal? But it's up to the employee. They own their goal. They own the success of their goal. And when you look at things like, if we're moving forward every single year with all our employees focusing on one thing they're doing to as a lean initiative to make the company better, or one thing they're doing as a personal development goal to make themselves better, you know, all of our employees times 10 years down the road, we're going to be much farther along than if we were always rating them on, you know, the past, like did they play nice? Did they show up? Did they keep their workplace clean? So you have to look at everything you do and tear it apart. And when you put it back together, it's like, is it engaging for our workforce?
Absolutely. Yeah, that actually that – I didn't mean to get off on the topic of performance, but that was actually the last episode that we had, episode 17, focused on performance management and another company that did very much the same thing. It was fun to hear kind of the similarities between you and them, because they're not in the same field at all. They're in financial services, and they did the same thing. They said, hey, why are we only looking at the past? All of our people are interested in the future. The only people that are interested in the past are those that are trying to cover their rear end, and they don't care about, you know, what's going on next for the people or how to enable their success. So that was a very similar kind of conversation that dug into how to make that transition to looking at career planning and aspirational goals for the employees and things like that. One more thing I want to cover with you before we go, because it's something that you and I are both pretty passionate about, and it's nice to find a kindred spirit that cares about it the same way. Let's talk about this thing of generations, because that's something that desperately, desperately needs to be shaken up. And I want you to you know, light something and throw it out there. What's your take on this idea and of generations in the workplace?
I'm glad you asked. So we're talking about Troublemaker on the first cruise. On the second cruise conference, because they're back-to-back, I'm doing one on generational dynamics, not generational differences. You know, that little buzzword that's out there, generational differences. Get rid of that buzzword too, everyone, please. Generational dynamics. There's a dynamic that goes on within each generation, and I think it's definitely for the positive. First of all, we have to realize I don't think that there's really generation or generation gaps. We really have to understand that every generation goes through what I call an age and stage of life. And I put it like this way. Everybody thinks millennials are such disruptors and pointing out what's so bad about millennials right now. And I'm like, boomers out there, before you point your fingers anymore, stop and flash back to the 60s and 70s when we had Woodstock and guys' hair was longer than girls' hair, and we had we were boycotting the Vietnam War, and women were challenging their place in the workplace, and we were doing all this disruption, and yet look, it was for the good in the end, and we were doing nothing different than the millennials are now coming into that space. And they're doing some disruption, and I think it's for the good. I did a training recently on generational differences, and I had groups of people by generations. And I said, what do you like about each generation, and what do you find frustrating about each generation? And at one point, the boomers said, you know, we're tired of the millennials having that phone in their face all the time. And the millennials turned back to the boomers and said, we're tired of your piles of paper all over your desk. Get a scanner. And I'm like, okay, this training is not going where I wanted to. But we started having discussions around this, and it was that awareness. It's like, boomers, the millennials are not messing around when that phone is in their face. They exist. That's technology, and they're using that technology to be more efficient in the workplace. And likewise, the millennials are more than willing to say, hey, boomer, I understand you didn't grow up on the technology we grew up on, but we're willing to sit here and show you how to set up your files paperlessly so that we can all work more efficiently. So I think we need to find the dynamics of each generation and utilize those for the advantage of the corporation, and forget this difference. There isn't a difference. We all bring something good to the workplace. We just have to figure out what that dynamic is.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the way that I approach that when I start off the conversation, when I'm talking about the topic or I'm trying to push back on it, someone, you know, throws it out there and says, hey, you know, those millennials are whatever. They make some broad general statement. And I said, you know what? What about those Asian females? They're like this. or those, you know, African-American males, they're just like this. And they give me that shocked look on their face. I'm like, you just did the exact same thing about some, you know, stereotyping some group of people based on one observation or a couple observations of a certain person. And the stereotypes are, it just blows me away. So I try to shock them back a little bit with a, hey, stop and think about what you're saying, what you're doing, because this is not, this wouldn't be okay in any other context. But because at this point, the so-called millennials, or, you know, again, I'm being inundated now with Gen Z, everything, but these people are at the low end of the totem pole organizationally, so they don't have the position power, the authority to push back or to fight back against those things people are saying about them. So we just, for a long time, it's just been let's categorize them and beat them up, or let's categorize them and treat them differently because of that. And no other instance in the workplace will we ever think that's okay, when that's our job to prevent those kind of things from happening anyway. And so that's the way that I kind of shock someone back into that. Awesome. We are closing up shortly. So anything, Jill, that you'd like to say as a closing comment to encourage our listeners to take action or to become a more active troublemaker in their own workplace?
The big thing I'm going to challenge everyone out there is just every time you do something, think about it. Why do you have it? The biggest thing is look at just challenging the system. I always say choose, challenge, change. Choose what you want to look at, challenge it, and change it. And start with things as simple as your handbook. There are some silly things out there, like we're trying to control healthcare costs, but we have a rule that says if you have 3 or more days off, you need a doctor's note to return to work. Well, the doctor can't cure the common cold. Just time off can. But in the meantime, you sent to the employee to the doctor to get a note to drive up your health care costs. Some of our old rules don't make sense. So look at them, choose them, challenge why you still do them, and then change it. Be a troublemaker. Make a difference in your organization.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jill, and thank you for the conversation. To everybody else, I appreciate you listening in and would love to see you on a cruise. If you're interested in checking it out and joining us, I will have a link in the show notes for more information, and you can check out what I'll be speaking about, Jill and some of the others on the conference. It's going to be, again, a lot of fun. We get to cruise. We get to talk HR, talk shop, all the best of, I say the best of both worlds, but the best of all worlds pretty much. So, again, thank you again for listening to We're Only Human. I'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to We're Only Human with Ben Eubanks on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. To learn more and to listen to the show archives for We're Only Human and all the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network shows, go to www.h3hr.com. And remember to subscribe to the HR Happy Hour Network podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or your favorite podcast player app.